is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brang. Great to be with you on a Friday afternoon. Is the top end going to experience a monsoonal burst next week? And what's the three-month outlook for the rest of the wet season? We'll be speaking to a long-range weather forecaster in just a moment. Also today, a look back at the year that was for cattle station sales in the Territory. And what might we see in 2020? We'll also today catch up with cattle producer and musician Ben Heaslip.
I remember listening to songs on the radio when I was in the stock camp, and I was amazed by the sounds. And so out of that, I started playing a guitar around the campfire, and then just kept playing, and it grows from that.
Yeah, cattle and chords. Ben is actually gearing up for a bushfire appeal concert that will be held in the Alice in a few weeks' time. I'll tell you more about that before 1:30. We are broadcasting across the Territory on the ABC, streaming online, and g'day to those who are listening via the podcast. Last year, a newly formed company called Cross Pacific Investments spent around $43 million buying up three cattle stations in the Katherine region of the Territory. Those stations were Scott Creek, Manbaloo, and Sturt Downs. With backing from the Burodovich family in Argentina, this company is now a really big player in the top end. It's in control of around 540,000 hectares. So, what are its plans? To learn more, I caught up with David Warriner, who is the former president of the NT Cattlemen's Association, and he's now a director for Cross Pacific Investments.
Well, Cross Pacific Investments, Matt, is the vehicle that's been created in Australia. It's an Australian company by the Burodovich brothers from Argentina. Burodovich brothers being the name of their parent company. The Burodoviches are a family that have been farming for about 105 years, founded in Argentina, but now they're in Uruguay, Brazil and the US, and now obviously in Australia. They're an investor that has got an enormous amount of experience and probably more than most that I can think of that are coming into Australia in the last 20 years. King Ranch comes to mind. They were cattlemen that came in out of Texas in the US. They brought a lot of experience and a lot of skill to the table. And really, these guys are very experienced farmers. They know what they're doing and they know how to get things done. So it'll be a very interesting program going forward, I'd say.
They're farmers. What sort of crops do they specialise in?
Oh, they specialise in soybeans and cotton, and then obviously every other crop that's part of those rotations. You know, they're in wheat and corn and peas and all sorts of other things, but sorghum and cotton is their main game. I think they produce about 20,000 hectares a year of each across the spectrum of investments that they have. They are also traders in these commodities. So they buy and sell from the national market in each country. Yep. And export, sell to the export markets or wherever. So they do a lot of that as well.
So how did the Northern Territory get onto their radar?
Well, they'd been out here for 2 or 3 years before they purchased Manbaloo, which was the first purchase, I think, in March last year. And they'd been out for two or three years, probably 4 or 5 times, looking at country across northern Australia. They did an enormous amount of research. The base research was basically looking at rainfall and soil types. Mm. These guys are farmers. They know what they're doing. So that's what they focused on. And rainfall, basically risk of drought and risk of flood, both being as bad as each other. And Katherine was the area that they landed at up after they eliminated all the other factors, just the area around there was what suited them.
And as it turned out, there was some country up for sale.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. So,
how did you end up on the radar?
Oh, I don't know. My name was mentioned and they yep. gave me a call one day when they were up here. I think that's about how it happened. I forget who mentioned it and all that, but I met them probably 18 months to 2 years before the Manbaloo investment happened, and that was in that period they went across all these other areas. I didn't participate in that. But when they decided to focus on Katherine and these properties, I got another call.
Starting up a company based in Australia, does that mean that Cross Pacific Investments can buy properties without having to go through the foreign investment review?
Oh, definitely not, Matt.
That's not how it works?
No, we had to go through the FIRB three times, yep, every time we buy something, now, irrespective of the size.
Also, even say Sturt Downs, quite a small property near Katherine. Yep.
Everything has to go through because you've gone over the $15 million threshold, so every acquisition now has to go through FIRB, and everybody's in the same boat with that one.
Is that an easy process?
Oh, I think the first time is a bit more onerous while you go backwards and forwards, but once you've done it once or twice, and it's just basically changing the descriptions and titles and all that sort of thing on the document. The documents are fairly standard, and once you get that bedded down, it's pretty straightforward. It's expensive. Every time you go in there, they don't seem to give you a discount for the amount of time you've been in
there. So, Cross Pacific Investments, it's now in charge of Scott Creek, Mamblew and Sturt Downs. What is the plan?
Well, the Burotoviches are farmers, like I said. They don't have a lot of experience in livestock. They have some. Their desire is to develop for farming and not own a lot of livestock. They do own the livestock at Sturt Downs at the moment, and we're in the process of subleasing the areas out to a sublessee. And that's coming to fruition at the moment. It's not done yet, but it's almost done. And that lessee or lessees will sublease the properties for livestock production only.
Right.
And as land is taken back, it'll come off the sublease area. And the Brodoviches or Cross Pacific will do those developments.
And so going back to the plan going forward, I guess, to give our audience a sense of what Cross Pacific wants to do and what sort of crops it's got in mind?
Well, Cross Pacific, like I said, cotton and soybean experience, along with a lot of other things. We are looking at the moment of the developments for the next 12 months. We did inherit an in-situ application with Mamblew that we pursued for a little while, but the regulations have changed, the clearing guidelines have changed, and then we ran into some other hurdles with slope and flora surveys, which were hideously expensive, that weren't around before that. And so we're reviewing how we go forward with these sorts of projects, but we do need to get scale happening and numerous projects, because their objective is to develop quite a bit of land for farming. That's the intention, the objective, and the representations that were given to us by the current government over the last few years, that it's all very possible and would be made possible. So we are going to test the framework fairly soon.
So looking at crops like cotton or soybean for export?
Oh, definitely for export, but or you know, it's a market. Domestic buyers might pay for it.
If they want to pay money for it, you'll sell it to them.
It'll be the rate. We will sell for the best rate we can.
So if you want to do anything like this in the Northern Territory at the moment, you know, the path includes land clearing permits, water permits, non-pastoral use permits, and there's probably others that I can't think of at the moment. How are you feeling about that path and all the paperwork? Is it possible?
Well, I understand the paths and I understand the paperwork, and I will say it is onerous. It is ridiculously onerous, and so you've got to have big projects and deep pockets to really get things to happen. And you know, it is constraining investment at the moment, or restricting investment. There's people coming up and having a look and thinking, oh, this is too bloody hard, you know. So we've got to be very careful as the Northern Territory that we don't chase all this interest away, which we seem to be trying very hard to do.
The Burotovich family must have confidence, though.
Well, they have had they did have confidence. It's not as good as it was. Like last year when the legislation was talked about around the non-pastoral use permits and that changing, that really sort of, there were some red lights flashing there, and we actually went and saw the chief, and thank God it got put on the back burner. But these are the sorts of things that will make investors evaporate very quickly. If you do things like that, you know, you invest in a country that's got these guidelines and laws and regulations, and then you change them midway, why would you reinvest, or why would you go and have a go there when, you know, that's a sovereign risk issue, really.
Yeah. So if all does go to plan for the company, when would you hope to be planting?
I would hope that we would have land developed this year, 2020, in 2020, and be planting this time next year. You know, in the we don't have any sort of plans to for irrigation. These guys are dryland zero-till farmers, have been for 25 years. So, you know, I know zero-till has problems up here, but these guys are keen to look at solving problems as well. So
similar to what we're seeing at Tipperary right now, there's cotton in the ground and it's relying on whatever falls out of the sky.
Yeah. Well, and that's right. They do have the irrigator sitting on top of it to top it up and most of it, but they do have a crop, a dry land crop sitting there beside it. And that's, you know, dry land is a huge opportunity, I think. Irrigation is going to be constrained. Well, we are constrained now by water availability already. So, I mean, you wouldn't want to be trying to build an industry based on irrigated cotton because it's not going to happen.
Extracting something out of the Tyndall aquifer.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, it's said to be over-allocated already, so.
Over the decades, been a long line of international players come to the territory and leave after spending a lot of money. Why do you feel the Tomich family can be different?
Well, I can remember them. I can remember the 70s in Kununurra when we were kids, were over there, and I remember that American invasion over there and all that happening. I can remember the Tipperary story a little bit with the Americans there as well, which was a little bit later on, and then obviously Scott Creek with Americans once again, and Bryce Killen did that project through the late 70s, early 80s, and it all failed, and, you know, and they were talking sorghum in those days, and sorghum ended up having a problem, I think, more than anything with the wet season and moles and things like that, and it just made it untenable to continue the program. But cotton... Back then, there was no GM cotton, and you had to spray, and that was what killed it in the Ord back in the 70s. And, you know, when you were spraying a crop 20 or 30 times in its life for insects or weeds, but particularly the Heliothus problem back with the insects, I think you can't afford to do that. But nowadays, I think the Tipperary crop last year did 3 sprays of each.
Yeah. Because it's not just
three insecticides.
It's not just GM. It's this Bolgard 3.
Yeah.
In particularly. Yeah.
Been particularly successful at resisting Heliothus. Yeah.
The company's bought 3 cattle stations.
Mm.
Would it be willing to buy more land?
If there was an opportunity and it fitted the model, I think it'd be looked at. But it's certainly not the focus now. The focus now is to get the lessees in place, get that sorted out with the livestock. Because we do have a commitment under the Pastoral Land Act to run livestock, so we have to sort that, and we will sort that, and then we'll focus on the development programs where we are at the moment, and we've got enough scale and acreage to work on, I think, at the moment, so we don't really need any more to do things.
And do we have any Buratovichs now living in the territory and working here?
No, not at the moment, no. That probably won't happen for a while, but look, I'd imagine in a year or two, and when there's a fair bit of action happening, there will be Buratoviches or South Americans starting to be around and be seen, which will be good, interesting.
Yeah. Well, all the best in the year ahead, and thank you very much for telling us a bit about what's going on around Katherine.
No problem at all, Matt. Hopefully it all goes well and we've got a good story in 12 months' time.
It's David Warriner. He's a director for Cross Pacific Investments. That company spent a lot of money last year buying cattle stations and has got some big plans. In the territory last year, there were several large NT property sales, including Mambaloo and Scott Creek, which we were just talking about. But other properties that sold included Epinara, Kalala Station, Yuka Ronage. The list goes on. It was a really big year. How is 2020 shaping up for the NT cattle property market? We'll be taking a look at that before 1:30 today.
Hi, I'm Ben Hoffman, ant specialist from CSIRO. When I'm out and about collecting ants, I love listening to the ABC's Country Hour.
There's 3 months left in the wet season. What's the forecast? I'll share that with you in a moment, but first let's have a tune by Ben Heaslip from Bond Springs Cattle Station in the Red Centre. You'll be hearing more from Ben before 1:30, but yeah, here's one of his tunes. It's called Highway. He runs cattle, he plays guitar, that's Ben Heaslip, and the tune Highway. It is 12 to 1 here on the Country Hour. Tomorrow is the 1st of Feb. Can you believe it? The start of February tomorrow, which means officially on the calendar, there's 3 months left in the wet season. And while there's been some nice rain in the last week or so, the Territory is still well behind its average in terms of rainfall. The Weather Bureau has today released its three-month outlook. So to find out what's forecast, I had a chat to climatologist Greg Browning, and I started by asking for his summary of the wet season thus far.
Yeah, well, it's been a very dry start to the wet season. So particularly the wet season in 2019 saw below average rainfall just about every part of the NT. Fortunately, January is starting to improve. So after the breakdown of the positive Indian Ocean Dipole, which was the dominant climate driver and leading to those really dry, warm conditions pretty much right up until the end of 2019, we've seen a breakdown with that, and basically with the monsoon trough sort of developing around northern Australia, we've seen some tropical moisture finally make its way into northern Australia. And so that's why throughout, in a few different episodes of rainfall during this month, we've seen some substantial falls. And while it's still got a long way to go to make up for all the deficiencies for the early part of the wet season, and obviously going beyond that, starting from a pretty dry base with the poor wet season last year as well, it's starting to make some progress, and it's looking like the rest of the wet season could see some average rainfall. So hopefully we'll go some way towards getting close to average overall by the end of the wet season.
There's been a bit of commentary around the monsoon and how it's the latest onset that Darwin has seen on record. Where is the monsoon trough, Greg?
Yeah, it's sort of gone a little bit indistinct at the moment, Matt. So we did have a really good monsoon flow over Cape York Peninsula in just recent days. But as the low that was drawing in a lot of that moisture and the westerly winds from the north has sort of tracked further inland, it's sort of broken down a little bit just in the last few days. So we don't really have a distinct monsoon trough at the moment. We've still got some moist flow, particularly over the northeast of the country. There's a chance, though, that monsoon could ramp up again early next week and may even see the onset of the monsoon at Darwin, which is what we use as our technical definition of monsoon onset.
So there could be a monsoonal burst next week?
Could be. So, yeah, it's not a done and dusted deal just at this stage. There's certainly some hints in the model that we look at, and also just in the broader situation, we might see some strengthening winds from the north coming across the equator in towards northern parts of the top end. Looks like that trough may develop further and start to transition back to sort of more like a monsoon trough. So there's definitely a distinct possibility at this stage, yeah, that, as you know, the monsoon can be very fickle and it can move and change and develop and everything like that. So we're just keeping a close eye on things, but it certainly looks relatively promising at this stage.
The Manjulian Oscillation, the MJO, do you know where that is?
I do. That's currently weak, so using the normal ways that it's measured, basically is not really having any influence whatsoever on tropical weather. And unfortunately, when it's weak, it also makes it a little bit harder to forecast its evolution. So there's a bit of variation in the models there, but it doesn't look like it's going to strengthen significantly in probably the next week or so. But some of the models are suggesting that it may strengthen a little bit and move out towards pretty close to Australian longitudes, and then that may start to build then, particularly with the potential monsoon developing. They can be self-reinforcing, and so we may see a pickup in the next week or two. But at this stage, the MJO is weak, and it looks like if this monsoon burst does kick off early next week, it'll be in the absence of a significant MJO signal.
So the three-month outlook, the 3 months ahead, what's it looking like for the Territory in terms of rainfall?
Yeah, fortunately, it's looking just pretty neutral at the moment. So we don't have a strong signal for drier than average or wetter than average. So in the absence of those climate drivers, so nothing like an El Nino around. As I mentioned, the positive Indian Ocean dipole has collapsed and we're back to neutral there as well. So in the absence of really any strong drivers, it's going to more depend on what happens during the season with those weather conditions, what happens as far as the Madden-Julian Oscillation goes. But our longer-term outlook is saying that between now and the end of the wet season, it's likely to be close to average. So, yeah, so it's better than what it has been.
Yeah, does that mean, given that a lot of the territory at the moment, like if we take the rainfall figures from the 1st of October through till now, a lot of the territory is behind. It's below average. And so if the forecast is from average from here on, does that mean by the end of the wet season, a lot of places are forecast to have below average rainfall for the entire wet?
Yeah, you can certainly read that into it. And that's right. That's quite reasonable, Matt. So, yeah, as I said, we've started from a slow base. It looks like it's going to be average from here on in. But, yeah, that does mean that there's a good chance that some places are just going to miss out. And, again, because it's going to be highly dependent on, you know, monsoonal rainfall and some of those big weather systems happening, they're always hit and miss as well. So some places might see some really good rainfall and end up getting, you know, up to their normal wet season average. And the other places who aren't affected as significantly by, you know, a good burst of monsoon activity are going to miss out, unfortunately, and they'll probably see a drier than average wet season.
It only takes one tropical low, one cyclone to change the numbers pretty quickly, though, I guess.
Exactly. And we've seen that just lately as well. You know, the Barclay's done really well, parts of Queensland, and potentially, you know, other parts of the southern half of the NT are going to do reasonably well with that low as it tracks sort of across that area over the next few days.
Appreciate your time, Greg.
My pleasure, Matt.
That's Greg Browning. He's a climatologist with the Weather Bureau, and he's been busy crunching some numbers for us, for you. He's got all the rainfall figures for the wet season thus far. So these are rainfall figures from October 1 through to today, January 31. And these numbers, I tell you what, they really do show how poor the wet season has been. You take a look at Darwin, the average rainfall for Darwin between October 1 and January 31 is about 889 millimetres. This wet season, 575 in the gauge. That's about 65% of the average for Darwin. Gets worse if you head to Tyndall near Katherine. The average is 597 millimetres. This wet season, it's sitting on 249. So Tyndall sitting at 42%. Of the average. It gets even worse if you head out to Victoria River Downs cattle station. It normally has 351 millimetres in the gauge. This year it's had just 132. So it's sitting at 38% on its average wet season. And it gets even worse if you head out to Gove, Nhulunbuy. The average out there for between October 1 and January 31 is about 502 millimetres. This year, just 151 millimetres at Gove. So that is 30% of the average, which is the lowest on record for the gauge there at Gove. Has not been a good wet season thus far. There's still 3 months to go. You never know what might happen next week. Big thanks to Greg Browning for crunching those numbers for us. And we'll put all that up on the ABC Rural Facebook page as soon as we can this afternoon. It's 3-1 here on the Country Hour. Ken Vowles, today is his last day as a politician. He's handing in his resignation from Parliament later this afternoon. He was, of course, the Territory's Minister for Primary Industry for just over 2 years, and he's been the member for Johnson since 2012. He was on ABC Radio this morning speaking with Adam Steer. He was asked what his biggest regret was during his time in politics. This was his response.
The biggest regret is probably, you know, we have a lot of major projects on the major projects list. And I've always said, I want to stand up here at the mining club or somewhere else and say, hey, we got these off the list. And although governments, we try and add to the list, we should be getting those major projects off that list so they run up and running. And I think that's a disappointment. We need long-term planning for that instead of press releases out saying we've given somebody major project status, because that means nothing. What we want to see is those projects off the list, which means jobs for Territorians, more money coming into the coffers so we can spend it on Territorians.
What's next for Ken Vowles? You hand in your resignation this afternoon. You've ruled out any future steps into politics. What's next for you?
Well, what's next for me? I'm going to do some family stuff. I'm going to reconnect with all my little niece and nephews and be the favourite uncle. I'm about to go and adopt a pet from Paws. So I'm going to train a puppy how to be a good person and spend some time, which gets me outside as well. But that's about it at the moment.
So you say that you hold your Labor values close to your heart. Will you be campaigning with your Labor replacement in the upcoming by-election?
I think it's best for the people of Johnston to make the right decision who they want to select as their member. I'm a Labor Party person, but I'm clearing the air for all the candidates from all the parties to best put their case forward and represent the people.
That's Ken Vowles, the former Minister for Primary Industry, speaking to Adam Steer this morning. We wish Ken all the best in his next adventure.
G'day, I'm Mark Smith from Darwin Fruit Farms. We're out in the pineapple paddocks at the moment, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
There were some really big cattle station sales last year. Really big properties were sold. Millions of dollars were spent. How's the cattle property market looking in 2020? We'll have a chat about that on the Country Hour in a moment, but we've got to go to the newsroom, 1 o'clock.
G'day, I'm Steve Beattie from Road Trains of Australia. Yeah, I've been working for RTA as a truck driver and then in management since 1987. Yeah, and when I'm out on the road in the truck or in my car, I tune into the Country Hour.
If you were getting ready to jump into the truck and head towards Alice Springs to go along to a bushfire relief concert tomorrow in town, we've been told that that concert has been postponed. It was set to be held tomorrow between 5 and 9 o'clock, but it's been postponed because the forecast is for rain in the Alice, so they're holding it back. The new date is February 22. So, yeah, if you were out in the Barkly or something and keen to go and about to jump in the truck, just woo your horses. February 22 is the new date. We'll be catching up with one of the musos set to perform at that concert before 1:30. His name's Ben Heaslip. He's from Bond Springs Cattle Station. So he knows his cattle, he knows his chords, and you'll hear more from him very soon. Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Rebecca Patrick is there this afternoon. Beck, there's been some pretty decent rain in the last 24 hours. What are some of the best figures up to 9 a.m. this morning?
Yeah, the best numbers were around the Gregory District, with Williams Crossing getting 79 millimetres. Also, Coolabah and Bradshaw Range in the northern parts of the Gregory District getting 60 millimetres. And also, Kiana over in the Carpentaria District received 65. So,
wow, that's good rain there.
Some good falls through those, just south of the top end there. And those storms over the Gregory District continued through the morning, so we had a little bit more falling in the rain gauge after 9 a.m. as well.
We've received a report from Timber Creek of 137 millimetres in the gauge, which is huge. Does the Bureau have an official rain gauge in town there?
No, we've got rain gauges around Bradshaw, which is fairly close. There was certainly a number of reasonable falls through there. As I said, Bradshaw Range received 60 to 9 a.m. and then Bradshaw Training Area, which is nearby, had a further 19 millimetres this morning. So, when you're putting these kind of numbers together, that you could easily get something around that 100 millimetres.
Mm-hmm. And I see in the red centre, New Haven, 20 millimetres in the gauge there. That's significant. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
And Gervois has had 24 as well.
Gervois, 24 as well. Alice Springs Desert Park got 12, but not quite so much around town. Just a few little showers coming through yesterday, with a, yeah, less than 10 millimetres, more around town.
The weekend ahead for the Territory, what can we expect, Beck?
Yeah, it's kind of all happening throughout the Territory in the next few days. We've got those showers and storms continuing down in southern parts of the Territory today, just starting to see a few showers developing over the western Simpson District and the eastern Lassiter District. You can see that on the Alice Springs radar now. So expect some storms to develop in those areas as well this afternoon. We are also expecting a trough to move in from Western Australia later on tonight and move across those southern districts tomorrow, which again could cause some severe thunderstorms.
I think that's why they've postponed the concert there in Alice Springs. Yeah.
So expecting that trough to be moving through Alice Springs tomorrow afternoon. So,
and how much rain could that bring, Rebecca?
Yeah, it depends on the setup for the thunderstorms. If you get the storm sitting over you for a little while, then you're going to have more rain. But if it's, you know, it might pop up just on your neighbour's farm and not on yours, unfortunately, as well. But I think that area, the Western Simpson District, is probably one of the more favourable areas because that's around when the trough will be moving through during the afternoon. So the afternoon period is that more favourable time for thunderstorm development. I think Alice Springs during the afternoon and into the evening definitely has some potential for some severe storms with some heavier rain in that.
The Todd may flow. Just might.
Well, that's, yeah, I'm not going to make that call, but you could get some good rainfall through there.
Looking at the Catherine radar this afternoon, there's colour. There's a bit going on. Is there any rain in it?
Yes, well, we're not seeing any big numbers just yet falling in rain gauges. It's all sort of below 10 millimetres so far. So near Catherine, we're actually getting a bit of that outflow from those storms that were over the Gregory District this morning. So that's just moving in to the Catherine area now. But they don't look too strong at this stage, but it is coming into that time of day when we do start to see those storms starting to develop a bit more, which we are seeing further north over the Daly District as well, just a few storms just starting to fire up amongst those showers.
Great. And what's in front of you there, Beck, regarding next week? Are we getting a monsoonal burst or not?
Definitely possible. We've currently got a trough that's extending up through central districts and into the Gulf of Carpentaria. As that trough over the south moves through, we get a southerly burst pushing through, and that's going to move the trough over central districts further north. So we'll start to see increased shower and storm activity, particularly over the Gregory District over the weekend. And then that trough is expected to become more established near the base of the top end early next week. Does look like more kind of monsoonal weather potentially developing early next week and maybe even a low developing within that.
Ripper. All right. Thanks so much for that, Beck. Appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks, Matt.
Rebecca Patrick there at the Weather Bureau. A few other rainfall figures that have come through from cattle stations in the Red Centre, Lucy Creek, 37 millimetres on top of, I think it had 60 mil in the gauge earlier in the week, so that's nice there at Lucy Creek. Some extra rain at Oratipara as well, 20.5 millimetres in the gauge there. Kinmen Springs in the VRD, 43 millimetres. Kiana, as mentioned, 65 millimetres. And 61 millimetres out at Coolabah Station. That'll keep the Jones family happy. So there's been a bit around. Hey, this Sunday, put it in your diary, Landline. It's back for 2020.
This week on Landline, the farmers trying to come back from bushfires.
People are doing this everywhere. They're dragging dead bodies away. They're trying to keep their cows alive.
And in drought-hit WA, wild camels are being shot hundreds at a time to protect precious water supplies for cattle.
I peaked out at 435 in a day.
That's Landline, 12:30 Sunday on ABC TV.
It is 13 past one. Last year was a big year for cattle station sales in the Territory. Millions were spent. There were some really big, really iconic properties sell. So what can we expect from the market in 2020? Carmen Brown caught up with rural property valuer Frank Peacock to get his take on station sales in 2019 and what he's expecting for the year ahead.
Yeah, well, 2019 was a pretty good year. It was certainly a good year for the Territory Revenue Office because there was some big dollars paid. And I've actually just done some sums and added up there was about 11 sales in the Northern Territory. There were actually none in the Kimberley last year, but those 11 sales added up to about $146.5 million. And that's excluding cattle and plants, so that's just the properties bare. So that actually compares, I had a look at 2018. There were only six sales back then, and that was about $32 million worth. So big lift in volumes. And also, interestingly, it's just the lift in the dollar per A or the beast area value, which that's the unit of measurement we value cattle stations by and analyse sales. And in 2018, it was about $1,370. That's going by our estimates of carrying capacity per AE. And in 2019, probably averaged around $2,500 an AE, so that's a significant lift. Mm. So it was a big year.
So coming off the back of that, so what are you expecting for the year ahead?
Well, probably a bit of the same. I mean, a few things have got to happen with rainfall back in the eastern states, which could have an influence. But I guess the job of a valuer is keeping contact with the market, and generally the station agents who are selling these properties is where we get a bit of our info. And I've just had a yarn to Alison Ross down at Elders and Catherine, and also Andy Gray up here, Territory Rural, and both have said similar things, and it's what I've anticipated as well, is that Territory Country, believe it or not, even though we're at these super expensive prices, as far as breeding country goes, it's still relatively cheap, believe it or not. So I think we'll see our friends from the eastern states still continue to pop their heads over here looking for breeder country, which they can then, you know, take back the progeny and finish them off on, you know, superior quality country back in the eastern states. And that's for the north, and also around in the Alice Springs district as well. There was sales last year where buyers from, you know, down in South Australia, et cetera, they still think that Territory offers some very cheap breeder country compared to, you know, the country they would have to breed on back home, which is far more expensive. So, yeah, breeder country, and also definitely the shift to agricultural uses on pastoral leases and on freehold country that's designed for agriculture. But there's a demand now that I haven't probably seen in my last 20 years for cropping country, and one of the drivers for that is probably the GM cotton, which is starting to grow in size in terms of trial plots, etc. But certainly those agents, I think Andy was saying he has had good inquiry, and so is Alison, good inquiry for cropping country, mainly from eastern state and southern state buyers. And it's not just irrigation country, it's for the cotton, it's also for dry land. I think Andy was saying that he's had clients that know from, they're actually from southeast Queensland, that getting the irrigation water up here is not a certainty, but they're definitely prepared to have a crack at the dry land side of it. So,
We've certainly been hearing a lot of that this year, yeah. It's not just from those interstate growers, is it? It's also, we've seen foreign investors looking particularly at cotton. Are you hearing much in that space?
Yes. There needs to be some deals go over the line, but there's inquiry. I guess they've got to do their due diligence. Had experience in the past where foreigners probably don't have the full picture of what's on offer over here, but I think they're becoming a bit more astute now, and they seem to have a better understanding of what you can do. So if they're still in the market and still looking, knowing what they know, then that's a good sign. But, we'll, you know, 2020 could be the year for a few more of them.
And with that in mind, are there any particular regions, do you think, that will see properties in higher demand than others?
I think the Alice Springs region's still in high demand. It's tightly held, and it's still seen as being reasonably affordable breeder country. And I have to say that the beast area values are sort of still, they're off the charts. They're record highs, and they're still thinking that. So, and in the northern half, I guess, it always generally jag a bit of rain. So if this wet season monsoon spreads itself wide and we get some good grass, I think that there could be some grass buyers. Actually, Andy Gray was saying that he's had inquiry for people who will be looking for grass potentially. It does depend on what happens in Queensland too, but in terms of the rain. But then, yeah, for farming country, so the Douglas Daly, if land became available, or in Katherine farming country to grow cotton, and certainly over the border in the Ord. There's action on the ground now there. Obviously, the Country Hours reported on a few stories there with Cubby moving in and to do some trials. And if land does come available and a gin's built, then that would probably be a bit of a hot spot, I'd say.
And you touched on pricing there. Do you expect there will be much change this year from what we have seen in the past 12 months?
I don't know. Like I said, it is very expensive and touching base again with Alison Ross down there at Elders, she was saying that good demand for leasing country because the price to buy and the cost of buying in is, you know, it's at fairly high level. So the cheaper alternative is to lease land. And actually, that's probably, leasing of country is probably going to be something we see a bit more of this year. And that is because the cost is so high. So maybe beef area values are on a trajectory to level out. But yeah, never say never.
That's Frank Peacock from Heron Todd White in Darwin speaking to Carmen Brown. If you missed the start of today's Country Hour, then you missed our chat with David Warriner from Cross Pacific Investments. It's the company that forked out $43 million last year to buy Manbaloo Station, Scott Creek and Sturt Downs, all of them in the Katherine region. That interview, if you missed it, it's up online right now if you go searching for NT Country Hour. Up next, we're heading to Bond Springs Cattle Station to catch up with cattle producer and muso, Ben Heaslip.
Can I get an outlaw? Oh, can I get an outlaw?
Can I get an outlaw, Luke Coombs? What would Waylon Jennings do? How good was that line? Love that. 23 past one on the Country Hour. Now, the community of Alice Springs was set to host a bushfire relief concert tomorrow night, but because of the forecast rain and maybe some dangerous storms in the Alice, it's now been postponed until February 22. That news has really only just come to us in the last hour or so, so that's just a recent change. So February 22, if you're keen to go along to that concert, Ben Heaslip from Bond Springs Station, he's one of the musicians who will be performing at the Appeal in a few weeks' time. Jack Price caught up with him in his studio to talk about making music on a cattle station and chipping in to help those in need.
Yeah, little telly, yep, beautiful. And left. Lefty, I'm a left-hander. I believe it's for the Country Women's organisation. It's a fundraiser for the bushfires, which is great because people are suffering through the fire and the damage and the costs, and so hopefully that'll help build some support there. I'm going to play a set of my songs.
We're obviously a long way from where the bushfires have occurred, but the community up here is really chipping in and trying to support people who are a fair way away.
Definitely, and I think it's happening Australia-wide, isn't it? Everyone's sort of putting the hand in there and a bit of support and help these people get back on their feet.
I've just heard a few of your songs and we're sitting in your studio at the moment. There's gadgets and wires all over the place. Can you talk the listeners through your setup in here?
Yeah, definitely. I've got a multi-track computer system, and I record on a program called Cubase, which allows me to multi-track different instruments, and then you mix it all together to do the final product. And then I play through a multi-effects unit, which provides me a few different sounds of guitars, and then I run my vocals through a great delay unit, which makes it sound better than it is.
Yeah, I'm surprised that you managed to get any cattle work done with all the toys you've got in here.
That's right. Usually I'm up about before daylight working on a song, and then I got to go off and do the job.
You've played around for quite a while around these parts. How did you get into it?
Well, I think I remember listening to songs on the radio when I was in the stock camp, and I was amazed by the sounds. And so out of that, I started playing a guitar around the campfire, and then just kept playing, and it grows from that. And then I also learned to play the drums. It's a love, and I'm glad I do it. It's a good job.
Into the lake, out of a cold winter storm. Billy, a working man. Hey, she a traveller.
I like listening to rock. I like listening to all varieties of some country, some rock, and then I incorporate that into my songs. And grew up listening to great Australian acts and great American acts. It's just an influence, but also what bubbles out of your fingers, and then just sing about the bush and your daily routines, and. I sing about my greater driver, 7 days a week, dusty highways, making ends meet.
Yeah, that's great. Any references to Bond Springs in some of these songs?
Oh, yeah, more about the bush and the beautiful skies and the sunsets and the sunrises, and then I like to talk about dusty roads and desert roses and everything that's part of it, saddles and motorbikes and choppers.
Down the line, do you have any sort of ambitions for where you want to take your music?
Well, I'm always trying to write a hit song, but it would be great to play some good venues in Darwin and in Adelaide, and then also maybe go and busk on the streets at the Tamworth Music Festival or the Gympie Muster or any of the country shows around the place too. That would be maybe a good avenue for my songs.
Hey, the outback of the scrub, hey. Dancing on.
It's pretty impressive how, you know, we're in a pretty remote station in Central Australia and you're able to produce and record and, you know, send this music worldwide.
I mean, that's right. I've got web pages, www.bennyheeslip.com, and Spotify. I've got some songs on Spotify. And I don't know, I've got friends over in England that have been through Central Australia, and they send me a message saying, hey, we just listened to you on Spotify. And technology today, I think, makes the world so much smaller.
Obviously, it can be pretty hard out on the cattle station, and the last couple of years have been pretty dry and tough. I imagine having an outlet like this is pretty important as well.
Well, it's nice to come home and have a play, but that doesn't make it rain. But no, I think in a drought you just fix things up and don't spend any money and hang out till it rains.
Ah, we're under, hey, the Southern Cross tonight.
This is Benny Heaslip from Bond Springs Station in the Red Centre. And that bushfire appeal, as mentioned, it was scheduled to happen tomorrow night in the Alice, but because of the rain, it's been postponed to Saturday, February 22. All money raised from that concert will be going to CWA branches in New South Wales, Victoria and South Australia, which is fantastic. But yeah, put it in your diary for February 22. That's it for the Country Hour this week. Keep it rural.